declare a rent freeze, keep Portland housed. Thank you.
Thank you. Ma'am?
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Jean Favini, and I am a tenant at the Chestnut Court Apartments in Southeast and an organizer of the Chestnut Court Tenants Union. I'm here to support inclusionary housing, but also to address a related and more urgent issue, and that is what can be done now to assure safe, stable, and affordable housing for Portland's renters. At Chestnut Court, my neighbors and I came together to form our union after our landlords announced that they were going to raise our rents 4 times in 15 months. That, combined with the difficulty of getting repairs and abusive behavior by management, convinced us that we had to do something to preserve our community and our homes. We had to act because you haven't. Portland has made national headlines with our record-breaking rent increases and your tolerance of no-cause evictions that ruin people's lives for no reason other than the insatiable greed of landlords and their lobby. My rent has gone up 42% in the last few years. My landlord, who does not live in Portland, by the way, has constantly made threats to me and my neighbors about how we could go live somewhere else or pay much more to stay. Now, those threats are becoming promises. She has hired a management company, a sure sign that our rents will get hiked even more and our terms of continued tenancy will become draconian. Chestnut Court was built in 1971, and for over 40 years, rents have been kept affordable. The result was that people moved in and stayed, some for 20 years or more. We have a true community there, a diverse group of neighbors and friends whose homes are now threatened because nothing has been done to prevent this tidal wave of greed that is changing the character and quality of life in Portland. So I'm here, and I'm begging you. You can't wait forever to take, however many years it will take for inclusionary housing to make a difference. Tenants in Portland are facing displacement and homelessness this month, this week, today. How many more of us will end up living in our cars or sleeping on a cold Portland sidewalk because money from the rich landlord lobby is more convincing to you than the human cost of your inaction? How can you ignore us like this? We need a rent freeze now. We need a moratorium on no-cause evictions now. I appeal to your conscience, your humanity, your sense of decency. There is no justification for your inaction. It's hard to understand why you haven't acted yet. It's impossible to understand why you won't do it now. Thank you.
Thank you all. Can I get a show of hands? How many more people wish to testify? Okay, we're going to move to 2 minutes a person now.
The next three are Jamie Partridge, London Clower, and Grant Walter. And they'll be followed by 18, Jonathan Pulvers, 19, Audrey Gnish, I believe, and 20, Hugh Ong.
Okay, Jamie, you know the drill. Give us your name. You got 2 minutes.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jamie Partridge. I'm with the Letter Carriers Union. I'm a delegate to the Northwest Oregon Labor Council, AFL-CIO. Just in case I don't get through my 2 minutes. Yes, pass inclusionary zoning, but it's too little, not enough. As we heard from Dr. Bates, 25 to 40% of Portlanders are rent burdened, cost burdened renters. That's between 150 and 250,000 people. We're being forced out of Portland. We cannot build our way out of this housing crisis. We cannot inclusionary zone our way out of this crisis. We need a rent freeze, rent stabilization, an end to no-cause evictions, tenants' rights. And I'm here again to remind you that the working class, our organizations, the labor unions support the Portland Tenants United campaign to keep Portland housed. Northwest Oregon Labor Council, Portland Association of Teachers, Oregon Education Association, Communication Workers of America, Letter Carriers, Oregon Federation of Nurses, Lewis and Clark's Staff Support Associations, American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, Service Employees International Union, laborers. These unions, representing over 100,000 workers, support keeping Portland housed, rent stabilization. The rent crisis is trickling up to these workers who are in strong labor unions making living wages, but unlike a decade ago, these workers are not able to buy houses or rent in Portland or live where they work. Every rent wage raise we get gets eaten up by our rent increases. It now takes $27 an hour working full-time to afford the average one-bedroom apartment in Portland. That's why my sisters and brothers in the Letter Carriers Union make at the top of our wage scale, $27 an hour for a one-bedroom apartment, not to mention letter carriers just starting out at $15 an hour. We can't afford to live in the city. Rent freeze now.
Thank you. Sam?
My name is London Clower. I'm a freshman at Portland State University and a new renter. I am a new organizer with Portland Tenants United. I'm also the daughter of Margot Black, the most dangerous woman in Portland. I'm here to ask the city to vote yes for inclusionary zoning. I'm also here to say that inclusionary zoning is only step zero. I pay $725 a month for just my very small apartment in a quad at University Commons. I am fortunate enough to have some financial assistance through both my parents in various scholarships to assist me in paying the rent each month, but if I had to pay it myself, I would either need to work forty hours a week, making $13.50 an hour for it to be affordable, or if I were to work part-time, the more responsible choice for a full-time student, I would have to make $26 an hour. This is the reality for most of my classmates, which is why most of them don't live near campus. They don't live close in, they don't live in Portland. My freshman classmates, those who are just trying to do what you tell us to do, go to school, study hard, create an opportunity for yourself. Most of them live in Tualatin, Hillsboro, Happy Valley, Forest Grove, Canby, Troutdale, and Banks, Oregon. While the fortunate few of us can spend time studying, building friendships, becoming civically involved, and enjoying the great city as newly autonomous young adults, most of my classmates are spending 1 to 2 hours getting to and from campus and still having 20 to 30 hours a week to paying the rent. My boyfriend is also a student, he wants to be, at PCC. He searched all summer with two of his friends for an apartment to live close to campus that they could all afford together, and to no avail, like many of my classmates, he's living with his parents. Many are living in crammed apartments with parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles, and cousins. This quarter, he is not signing up for classes because he would rather work to have money to pay the rent that he needs to live on his own. These coveted few units created through inclusionary zoning are like Willy Wonka's chocolate bar that won't be on the shelves for 3 to 5 years. I'm going to skip a lot of this because we got to.
Actually your time, right. Your time is up.
Well, we should keep Portland housed. Okay. It'll be.
Thank you. Okay, sir.
Hi, my name is Grant Walter. I'm an organizer with Portland Tenants United, and just here to say that the city needs you to pass inclusionary zoning. The proposed policy is necessary to hold our communities together, but as Jamie and London said, it's not nearly enough. We need a rent freeze now, and we need rent control, and we need a tenant's bill of rights that supports people who make this city. A city that does not offer its citizens a fair opportunity to have stable, affordable housing when there is available supply is an unreasonable and unjust city. We demand that all the citizens of Portland receive access to stable and affordable housing. Without this, we are not a city, and we are not equal. Those of us who rent, 49% of Portlanders, are in a crisis. Affordable housing is disappearing, wages are not increasing fast enough, food costs are inflating, and the general livability of Portland is out of reach for many long-time residents. Our city government, through lack of action around this housing crisis, is selling out tenants to developers. Inclusionary zoning is necessary, but this alone will not solve the problems that we face. In terms of housing policy, we must have a rent freeze, we must have rent control, we must have a city government that honors a tenant's bill of rights in order to stabilize the market for almost half of Portland's residents.
Great. Thank you all. Thank
you. Next three are Jonathan Pulvers, Audrey Gnish, and
take your sign, Grant.
And Grant. Hugh Ong, and they'll be followed by 21, 22, 23, Laura Golino DeLavato, Andrew Riley, and Lauren Macbeth.
I lost track of whose name was called first.
I think right here.
Okay, go ahead.
Morning, councilors, and thank you for being here. My name is Jonathan Pulvers, and despite my relatively kempt appearance, I am a lifelong Portlander. I'm here because I did for a couple years live elsewhere, and I wanted to share with you a cautionary tale or two. I'm lucky to live here and to be housed, but I have seen the housing prices both where I live and around me rise at astonishing rates. And having spent significant time in the Los Angeles, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and New York metropolitan areas, I know what it's like when a city becomes a playground for the rich. And I know that you all have an opportunity here to do as Seattle is doing and attempt to mitigate or militate against that possibility. We have heard developers up here talking about changes to this policy that might benefit them. I'm not against policies benefiting developers in some way or another, but given the other considerations that you've heard from other people around here in this meeting and elsewhere, it's borderline obscene that you would privilege developers' profits in any way in this policy above the other concerns that you've heard, and I hope that you'll think about that carefully. So it seems apropos, given that this weekend marked the MLS Cup victory of Seattle's soccer team, following our MLS Cup victory, that you ought to note that Seattle ought to be following us, and we ought not to be following Seattle. Unfortunately, Seattle has jumped way ahead of us in attempting to create a housing policy that makes the city affordable for their residents. And I would hope that you would take note of that and put Portland in its rightful place as the leader in the Northwest vis-a-vis a housing policy that does that. So I'm not picky about one or another particular detail, but I'd like you to keep the renters and the moderate income folks in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Ma'am?
Hello, my name is Audrey Ganick. I am here today to speak on behalf of Portland Forward and Portland Families with Children. Portland Forward is a nonprofit organization founded by the late Bing Sheldon, and our mission is to drive Portland's future towards being a great city that is sustainable, equitable, and livable, where all can flourish. I'm also a parent who is lucky enough to be able to afford both childcare and time away from my job to be here to speak on behalf of parents who could not find the time today. We are in support of inclusionary zoning, but we also want to ensure that inclusionary housing ordinance ensures production of family-sized units. There are a growing number of families with children in the Central City. Many started their families in the district and would love to stay. The city recognized the growing population of families and adopted the North Pearl Plan in 2008 to incentivize family-sized units and amenities for families with children. At that time, nearly 90% of the housing stock was comprised of studios and one-bedroom units. Since the plan's adoption, family-friendly two- and three-bedroom units have increased to be 27% of the total housing stock in the Central City. Many studies show that inclusionary housing have a huge impact on the production of family size units among market rate and affordable projects because the numbers just don't pencil. Birth rates in the Central City have grown 30% since 2003. Our children are here. Let's keep them here. The importance of families in the Central City is vital to the stability of our city, to its vibrancy, and to its safety, and to its economic viability. It is our future. Thank you for your time and your leadership.
Thank you.
I'm Hui Yong, Executive Director of OPAL Environmental Justice Oregon. I grew up and call Portland home. As a member of this community, I've experienced firsthand and the rapid rising in housing costs have done to our cities and our communities. I've seen neighborhoods gutted and families forced to move as our homes are literally sold out from underneath us. Profit-driven motives hijacked state housing policy in 1999 with a ban on inclusionary zoning. In 2011, OPAL identified the ban as a root cause of housing injustice, most manifested in the rampant displacement taking place in North and Northeast Portland. I'm going to skip a little bit and move on. As we hear from developers, it actually infuriates me that developers come up here and talk about what the market can bear. And I think the question really is for the council is really what can our communities, our neighbors, our families can bear. It is an atrocity that they would come up and think that they can continue to take on this city as their own personal bank. We know that developers do not build affordable units unless you make them do so, at least not in Portland. Unless we make them develop affordable housing, they will continue to flood the market and overbuild luxury units. It's no wonder they call themselves locusts. If we had inclusionary zoning for the last 17 years, we could have prevented the resegregation that happens in our city. This is very real. Look at who, where you live and who your neighbors are. Oregon now allows inclusionary zoning. It's a weaker version, but one we intend to strengthen at the state level in the years to come. The people of the city demand that this council does not make the policy any weaker because of the crocodile tears some of our region's wealthiest interests share. Developers who have made millions by displacing our most vulnerable communities do not deserve the handouts, special exceptions, and sweetheart deals we're giving them. We do not need to delay or ramp up periods to adjust. They do not need build-wide tax breaks. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Next three.
Are Laura Golino de Lovato, Andrew Riley, and Lauren Macbeth, and they'll be followed by 24 David Scholhammer, 25 Keith Millsark, and 26 Noel Johnson.
Okay, well, I'll start with you, Laura.
Okay, hi, I'm Laura Golino de Lovato. I'm the executive director of Northwest Pilot Project. Northwest Pilot Project serves seniors in Multnomah County, 55 and older. We do housing assistance, and we focus on the very, very low-income homeless and at-risk of homeless seniors. Inclusionary zoning is a great tool for the package of affordable housing tools in Portland, and we support it wholeheartedly. Inaffordability in housing is not inevitable. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of steps, and this is one piece of the whole pie. We believe that inclusionary zoning will do a good job in addressing the 80% AMI population, and are happy to see the deeper affordability of 60% addressed, and feel that by addressing these populations, we'll have some extra resources perhaps to address the 30% AMI that we deal with. So I encourage you to support and enact this ordinance.
Colleagues, can I just observe that over my service on the council, Susan Emmons was at the helm of Northwest Pilot Project, and she's a revered advocate in our community. And I think this is the first time that you've appeared officially on behalf of that organization. So welcome. And
it
you,
is.
You're filling
Thank
big
you.
Shoes, and we wish you a lot of
big
success.
Big shoes, size 19. Yeah. And you will see Susan here and there. She won't go away from the issue.
No, no, we have plans for Susan.
Yes, good. So do we.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank
okay.
you.
Morning, Commissioners. My name is Andrew Riley. I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator for 1,000 Friends of Oregon and a lifelong Portlander. And I'm here today to lend our full support for inclusionary zoning. I believe our interim director, Mary Kyle McCurdy, submitted written testimony, so I won't read that off at you, but how often do I get a chance to impersonate my boss up here? So 1,000 Friends has been engaged in affordable housing issues since we were founded over 40 years ago. And as I'm sure you know, Goal 10 of Oregon's Land Use Planning Program is housing. It sets out a really beautiful goal, particularly considering it was written in 1975, which is that every member of our community will have a place to live that meets their needs regardless of their income level. We're obviously pretty far away from achieving that. And that's why 1,000 Friends has fought hard to lift the preemption on inclusionary zoning. And we're frankly thrilled that you are rising to the occasion to pass what the state now allows. Inclusionary zoning is a well-tested tool. It's been used in over 500 jurisdictions across the United States, and the evidence is clear. It is one of the best ways we have of encouraging mixed-income, integrated neighborhoods, full stop. And as we know, Portland is increasingly segregated by race and class. You know, socioeconomic desegregation, integration, racial integration are critical for our livability. You know, we can't claim to be a livable city unless that's actually extended to everybody. So the policy in front of you is the best the city is able to achieve. It maximizes what is allowed under state law and delivers the strongest policy possible. We need more affordable homes in Portland, and we need inclusionary zoning. So I want to urge you to pass the policy in front of you.
Thank you.
Yep. I just have to object to your dissing the 70s by suggesting it's surprising a good thing was passed in 1975. Remember, the 70s were when a Republican president created the EPA as opposed to now when a new Republican is going to destroy it. So don't knock the 70s.
I was born in 1988. I don't necessarily have the historical memory here.
Okay, ma'am.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Lauren McBeth, and I'm the Assistant Director at Rose Community Development. We're a place-based CDC in Southeast Portland and a nonprofit housing developer, and I'm here today to urge City Council to support inclusionary zoning. We all know Portland is in the midst of an unprecedented housing crisis. To solve this crisis, we need every tool available to combat the problem. We're really proud of the City of Portland for working so hard over the past year to pass important legislation to support giving people a safe place to call home. Today, we have the chance to pair inclusionary zoning with other housing efforts like the recently approved general obligation bond, a short-term rental tax, and a construction excise tax. We know the answer to giving people a safe place to call home is through innovative partnerships. Passing inclusionary zoning will provide an opportunity for for-profit developers to contribute to the solution. In short, inclusionary zoning offers an opportunity for our city to grow strategically and provide all Portlanders with better access to affordable housing. Thank you for working to prioritize housing in our community. It means everything to the people that we serve.
Okay, thank you all. Thank you. Next three.
Are David Schollhammer, Keith Milsark, and Noel Johnson, and they'll be followed by 27 Tom DiChiara, 28 B. Stressthra, I believe it is, and 29 DeJeanette M. Thompson.
Welcome. We'll start with you, sir.
Okay. I am David Schollhammer, and I chair the Land Use Committee for the Selwood-Moreland Improvement League, better known as SMILE. We want affordable housing in our growing neighborhood. We do not want to lose affordable housing to off-site transfers. We ask that you limit off-site transfers. The one-half-mile rule you've imposed is good. We suggest that a better rule may be to limit transfers within the neighborhood or not allow them at all. Next, we believe that the cost of affordable housing should be shared by everyone. Eliminating parking minimums for affordable housing places a disproportionate burden on residences and businesses in the immediate vicinity of the affordable housing. Residents are faced with reduced on-street parking, increased congestion, decreased pedestrian, vehicular, and bicycle safety, and a reduced quality of life. Businesses have restricted customer access, which can affect their survivability. Therefore, we ask that you do not reduce the existing parking minimums. Our fear is that with transfers, we would get neither affordable housing nor parking. Finally, the proposal before you assumes that the comprehensive plan will change all EX zones to CM3 zoning, and with an early implementation floor area ratio bonus of 5-1. In our neighborhood, however, the EX zones will be changed to CM1 and CM2 with a smaller density in the floor area ratio bonus. This would create a spike in density on our EX zones for our EX properties in 2017, and we ask, therefore, that you please correct this density spike. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir? Never done this before. My name is Keith Milsark. I am the Executive Director of Parkview Christian Retirement Community. We are not a developer. We are a single-site, nonprofit retirement community located in East Portland. We offer independent and assisted living to seniors of all incomes. I would like to explain today how inclusionary housing would affect us and to request that nonprofit retirement communities be exempt from this regulation. I've submitted testimony that explains our concerns in detail, which you have just been handed. As proposed, these requirements will apply to new independent living apartments that we are hoping to build next year. The rents for these units will be higher than what the inclusionary zoning would allow, but this is because our rents are not simply rent. We include a host of supportive services, such as meals in the dining room, all utilities, cable TV, activities, housekeeping, transportation, wellness and fitness classes, daily well-being checks, chaplain services, emergency call response, and a number of other programs and services that foster the well-being of our residents. To comply with the inclusionary housing requirements, we would be required to decouple these services from our rents and essentially create two classes of tenants, those who benefit from our full range of services and those who do not. This would be very difficult for us from an administrative standpoint, and would be unfair to those who are getting the services because they would then be subsidizing those who do not. We're a nonprofit. We're not a developer. We cannot take advantage of the development incentives that the city proposes. The 10-year property tax exemption, the FAR bonuses, would not apply to us. Our project pro forma for our new building already assumes that our new units will be tax exempt. We have no need for the FAR bonus. We will bear all the cost of inclusionary housing without any of the offsets. So, and we don't have the funds to pay the fee in lieu of the regulations. So we respectfully request that you exempt nonprofit communities like ours from the housing regulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Noel Johnson. I am 37 and have managed or led about 2,000 housing units over the past decade as a developer for a couple different companies here in Portland. And I'm struck to follow this gentleman's testimony because the initial economist you had up here from MIT, he's right in the long run, but in the short run, he's wrong. He didn't tell you about basically how there's essentially, when you induce exogenous shock to the system, you create these negative short-term externalities like this. I don't think we're trying to prevent what he's trying to do. I just think the program is not properly crafted to achieve the shared goals that everyone else up here has been testifying about need to be impacted. I mean, I agree with pretty much everything everyone's been testifying about, maybe except for that developers are evil part. But I'm here to, and I'll continue to be here to try and figure this thing out. The point is, if I'm up here raising the red flag to say, I agree we've got problems, I want to kind of make progress towards solving them, but this is a red flag moment. I don't think we're going to get what we're wanting. But I'm the one that's supposed to implement the policy, and my colleagues, and especially over the decades to come, I'm young enough that I'm really supposed to do this. Shouldn't that be a red flag moment that maybe, like, a negative externality of, oh, geez, well, nonprofit, retirement communities, those guys are okay. Well, this guy's okay. Okay, I think let's take some time to get it right. I think Locus is trying. I think a lot of developers are trying to be engaged and to not be a party of no, but to be a party of, okay, yes, and let's try and tune it up and get it better. We just haven't felt like we've been able to help get to the shared goals that we're all trying to get to. So we're here and we'll try and keep here, but red flags.
Thank you. Thank you all. Three.
Are Tom DeShera, B. Shrestha, and D. Jeanette M. Thompson, and they'll be followed by 30, Michael Bionicor, 31, Tram Hong, and 32, Alan Lazo.
Welcome. Maybe you can call one more. Looks like we have room for one more.
Is D. Jeanette M. Thompson? Or Michael Bionicor?
He is here. Okay, great. Michael Bionicor, come on up. Okay, welcome, sir. We'll start with you. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Tom DeChera, principal and co-founder of Karen Pacific Development. Throughout this process, you have heard from many people in the business of building housing, and they have all told you to basically the same thing, that this policy, while well-intentioned, as drafted, is not going to work as discussed, and it will be counterproductive. It is not calibrated properly. It will kill more projects than it helps and will constrain supply over the long term. It's going to make the problem worse. I've been doing housing development in Portland for 15 years through all scales of project type, and I've looked at my recent projects, and none of them would make the cut after this policy was in place. It's not a matter of making less, as some have said today, but rather development is a margin business. And if I can't meet margins demanded by lenders and investors, my projects don't get financed and they don't get built. Developers don't make those decisions. There's no amount of wishing changes that. I have 1,500 other units ahead of this legislation in the pipeline right now, none of which would survive the policy. It's not a bluff. It's just simple math. And facts do matter, as someone said earlier. I wish your consultant was right that, you know, no worries, this mandate will solve our problems and the housing supply won't be affected at all. But it's just not the case. Your consultant has used flawed data and anecdotes to support a made-to-order conclusion. The policy will have real and lasting negative impacts on Portlanders. It's not us developers that will feel the pain when you get the policy wrong. When projects no longer pencil, we stop building. We aren't forced to build. you aren't sticking anything to us. When we stop building, affordability problems gets worse. It's simple supply and demand, and Portland renters are the ones that will pay the price in the long term. The recitals of your own ordinance say as much, that today's problems are the legacy of too little building during the Great Recession. Yet we stand here today getting ready to artificially create a new housing recession caused by a well-meaning but deeply flawed policy. Or we can get the policy right by making the program more revenue neutral and recalibrating the inclusion rates as suggested by Locus testimony earlier, to leverage the private sector to attack the problem at a citywide scale. I think we're all willing partners in that effort. Or we can go with the punitive approach to propose today that does the opposite and will do more harm than good. That's the choice today. Many people are going to be very disappointed when this policy fails, and we will have wasted more time getting serious about affordability.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. My name is Vandana Shrestha. I'm the Director of Community Engagement for AARP, and it's my privilege today to offer these comments on behalf of our members. There are 65,000 of them in the city of Portland. An important part of our work here in Oregon and in Portland is to work on livable and age-friendly communities, including expanding housing options and successful aging in place. During the 2015 legislative session, we were proud to support the passage of Senate Bill 1533. And though the bill that was passed was a compromise, it was a step in the right direction. And now we're very excited to see its implementation here in Portland. It's a new tool that we didn't have before, and it's an important tool to be able to use. You know, the entire state is looking. Here's an opportunity in front of Portland to do the right thing. To expand housing options through the implementation of inclusionary housing program, and we're here to show our support. Also want to thank the folks who have worked on putting together a very solid proposal. We were especially excited to hear about a couple of the things, the mandatory maintaining affordability to perpetuity, deeper affordability, on-site, focus on on-site units, also the focus on, you know, high opportunity areas, making affordability available in those places. Those are all things that are going to benefit people of all ages, all generations and income. And, you know, there are lots of data. I'm not going to say anything that's not been said by other advocates here, but just that, you know, older adults, we've heard about young people having opportunity here in Portland, but it's also about people who want to continue to live in Portland. You know, after the recession, people of all ages have been impacted, even though traditionally older adults have been homeowners. There are more renters, especially among, you know, minority and lower-income households, and that's just going to continue to increase. And we hope you will consider, I just want to say this, supporting, you know, AARP supports the inclusionary housing program and immediate implementation of the full inclusionary rate without delay. And we hope you'll consider adopting the plan with the strongest possible commitment to affordability.
Thank you. Michael.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Michael Bonacore. I'm the executive director of Home Forward. And I'm going to speak off the cuff rather than from my prepared remarks today. I want to tell you that I have been working in government, the public sector, and the nonprofit sector for almost 30 years now. And in that time, I've observed the power of public and private partnerships. I think those relationships are critical. I've heard a lot of narratives that are not particularly helpful, that the business community is evil, that they are only concerned about profits and not about people. And I've also heard a lot about how government and the public sector and the nonprofit sector should be more like business, and that things like the market will solve our problems, and that government doesn't really understand how the real world works. And you heard, we heard today from some of the brightest minds in our community, Vivian Satterfield, Dr. Lisa Bates, George Galster. Chair Kafouri is not informable, is formidable herself. Those folks have my confidence. The process that you ran, which was inclusive and thoughtful, but also moves assertively, as you have many times in setting policy, in making resource allocations, and referring a housing bond to the voters this year. You're on the right path. I urge you to stay on it and to vote to approve the inclusionary housing policy without delay. Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Was there a D. Jeanette M. Thompson? Okay. With Tram Hong? Alan Lazo, Tom Gearing, and after them I have Amira Streeter, Jeff Bachrock, and Joe Courtwright.
Okay, Attorney Allen, I think you were called first.
All right, good morning, Commissioners. My name is Tram Wong, and I am the Communications and Engagement Manager at the Welcome Home Coalition. I'm honored to be here today. Inclusionary zoning has incredible potential to create affordability, diversity, and opportunity throughout Portland. And as a coalition, Welcome Home is urging you to pass this policy as we continue to fight for more affordable housing solutions throughout the metro area. We need far-reaching solutions to address the comprehensive need in our region. The housing bond that Welcome Home helped to pass with your support is meant to help those with very low incomes, such as seniors who live on fixed incomes, single mothers, and those who are living with disabilities. However, our public investments can only go so far as the price of market rate housing continues to rise unchecked and misaligned with Portland's needs. With inclusionary housing, we can leverage new development with underutilized Section 8 vouchers. We can give modest income earners more housing choice, thus taking the pressure off of low-income renters who are facing rent increases of hundreds of dollars at a time. There are Portlanders who have modest wage jobs that simply aren't enough to ensure a safe and permanent home. In a sad twist of fate, this includes the very social workers who are working on the front lines of our housing crisis to prevent people from transitioning into homelessness. They work on the front lines and now find themselves no longer able to afford the city they serve. I am one of those people. As a young professional who was born and raised in North Portland, I've always dreamed of establishing a career and a life here for myself. Even after paying off my student debt from an in-state affordable university, I find it incredibly difficult to afford a place of my own, and I currently live with my parents so I can continue to do volunteer work, volunteer on advisory boards, nonprofit boards, and steering committees. If housing remains unaffordable to emerging professionals like myself, our priorities will have to shift from community leadership and engagement to a second job or potentially even leaving Portland. It's a sacrifice that I hope my civically engaged peers and I will not have to make. Please take action with inclusionary housing today and do not stall. More than ever, we need this policy in our toolbox. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Alan?
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Alan Lazo. I'm the Executive Director of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon here in Portland. As a civil rights organization dedicated to ensuring equal housing opportunity for all, we know that inclusionary housing programs across the country provide opportunity for households with varying levels of income. And it's time for Portland to provide those same opportunities in market rate developments here in our community. You've heard a lot about numbers during this hearing, but there's one number that may get lost in the talk about model calibration and residual land values, and that number is zero. From the State of Housing report that you heard about recently, zero is the number of Portland neighborhoods in which the average Black, Latino, Native American, or single mother household could afford to live afford to rent without becoming rent cost burdened. Again, that critical number to discuss today is zero. So as you talk about numbers, I implore you to consider what our values are as a community. We value undoing the forces that created that zero, which has meant zero opportunity for increased access to better transportation, education, and economic opportunities. Inclusionary tenants of the Fair Housing Act are the foundation of the work we do at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, and I believe that those ideals must inform your decision. Again, as shown in this State of Housing report, Blacks, Latinos, Hawaiian Pacific Islanders, and Native Americans disproportionately are renters in our community. Lower income renters disproportionately are persons with disabilities. These disparities among numerous protected classes are factors a jurisdiction must consider in its efforts to proactively, affirmatively further fair housing under the Fair Housing Act. Finally, we know that inclusionary housing is only one of the tools that you're working to solve our housing crisis. But inclusionary housing is uniquely important as a tool. It's like that spanner wrench that you have to run down to the hardware store to buy, because it creates housing for varying levels of income in areas of higher opportunity, where market rate developments are being built. So I urge you to pass the mandatory inclusionary housing program next week, fully funded at the 80-20 and 60-10 inclusion rates. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir?
All right. My name is Tom Gearing. I'm a research director of the Common Ground, Oregon-Washington chapter. I'm hoping that my comments will partially answer Commissioner Nick Fish's third question. We'll get to that. To make inclusionary zoning work, it is necessary to build a consensus around a quid pro quo, an offset that returns a public benefit in the form of inclusionary units at a value equivalent to the incentives given to the owner or developers applying for the housing program. SB 1533 requires that a financial incentive be offered. Those incentives must be fair and equitable from the perspective of both the owner investors and the taxpaying public, not too minimal as to impose a burden on the owners and not too excessive to constitute a windfall at the city's and taxpayers' expense. The means to accomplish this: a public disclosure rule. Any provision of economic value, including cash payments, below market interest rates, waiver, inclusion of fees or taxes, is a subsidy requiring disclosure. This simply means that the details of the subsidy be publicly disclosed. There's ample precedent for this. There are 23 states that have their laws on the books that require private entities receiving any form of subsidy to be disclosing their financial records. A financial worksheet should include routinely and should be accessible to all stakeholders, including City Bureau staff, local housing community, and the affordable housing advocates. And these include calculations of
your time is up,
all
sir.
Costs.
Sorry, all right. Your time's up. Thank you. Okay, thank you all. Next three.
Mr.
All
President, right. Would you agree to a two-minute compassion break?
Sure.
Thanks.
Let's make it a five-minute compassion break. How many more do we have?
We have about 22 more.
22 more?
Signed up, if they're still
signed
here.
Up, yeah. I don't think so.